Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE SmackDown Live.
Mike, what do you think of yet another match with AJ Styles, Kevin Owens, and Sami Zayn, now a triple threat match at Fastlane?
It doesn't surprise me, honestly. Going into the night, I half expected it to be something like a ruse like it was when Jericho and Kevin Owens had their issues, and then eventually they worked it out before they ultimately broke up. So I almost kind of thought they'd do a situation where they pin each other. But, you know, once AJ Styles was out there, you figure, okay, he gets involved, and they do that. So I was always expecting the triple threat to come of it. It is a little bit cumbersome based on the fact that we've had so many matches between these three guys already. But I will say that in comparison to the handicap match, it's a little bit more interesting because you still have this built-in animosity between Owens and Zayn that wasn't there before. And obviously Fastlane is just that holdover pay-per-view until you get to WrestleMania. So, I don't have a big problem with it. I think it'll probably be a solid match. I think it's a little bit more interesting even than their match was at the Royal Rumble.
Well, and I think there is going to be that mystery of how do Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn deal with both getting the opportunity that they each kind of wanted. They made it clear that there was some heat between them, that there was some tension based on who was, each of them kind of bragging that they would be the ones to one up the other and win this title shot. And now because of AJ, they're both in it. So the drama for the next however many weeks till Fastlane here is how are they going to get along? Are they going to get along? And are they going to work together? And if they can work together, who do they try to favor? You know, which is right. Then the big question. So they have a story that they can tell on SmackDown now moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, like I said, you know that they're eventually getting to AJ Styles against Shinsuke Nakamura. They've basically made the match. That's what they tease in little backstage segments. You know that's what it's going to be, but at least now you have something for your programming for the next month, and you don't have to really stray from the storyline that you already have in place. So I think it does make sense on those levels, at least.
Let me again set the table here. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show here on Tuesday, February 6th, covering SmackDown. And I'm joined by Mike Chiari from Ring Rust Radio. We'll hear more from Mike about his show in just a little bit. If you are not familiar with our brand split, just want to get that out there, that we will have two more shows this week, but they will be on the other feed, the Podcast One feed with a blue logo. So if you are not subscribed to that, you need to subscribe. Just search Wade Keller in Apple Podcasts. Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net will be my guest on the Thursday flagship. And then Interview Friday this week is my new interview with NWA World Heavyweight Champion Nick Aldis, the husband of Mickey James and formerly Magnus in TNA, Impact Wrestling. We cover a lot of topics, including the NWA and what's going on with his crusade, defending the title 20 times around the world in 60 days. He talks about how that idea came about, and he calls himself polarizing. And you will hear him be polarizing in this interview in terms of his views on some conventions going on among fans and wrestlers and ring style and all kinds of things. It is going to get people talking. It's a good interview. Part one this Friday, part two the following Friday, over 2 hours of compelling conversation with someone who has been a lot of places, just not WWE. And he talks about that also. And the recent dinner he had with an interesting response from somebody he met with from WWE. So all kinds of good stuff. Whetting your appetite for that. Be sure to download both the flagship and Interview Friday with Nick Aldis later this week on our red feed. This is the blue feed where we cover Raw and SmackDown. It is our post-show format with a mix of co-hosts, but we also welcome your phone calls. And if you're listening live, you can call us at 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. Mike, I want to ask you about the way the Kevin Owens Sami Zayn match developed and what kind of story you think they were trying to tell. I got the sense it was kind of a feeling out process. Then, a couple chapters later, Kevin Owens is saying, I'm the guy who wins championships. Things get heated. I thought that they built it effectively where it seemed like maybe they were wrestling and having a tough time going all out, and then they kind of irritated each other and went all out.
Yeah, I agree with that because, you know, like I said, going into it, I almost felt like it was going to be a ruse the whole time. Like, I felt like they were playing Shane McMahon and Daniel Bryan and doing all this in an attempt to get another chance at AJ Styles together, just like they did in that handicap match at the Royal Rumble. So that going into it, that was kind of my mindset. But I do think that the way that it played out as it went on, it was like it became a serious match. It became like, even if it was two friends going into it, you know, friends can have a natural rivalry, and I think that's kind of the story that they told, that these guys, they do have this friendship and they have this history together, but at the same time, they've had this rivalry, and that story's been told in WWE. It's been told everywhere they've been, all over the world. So I think that's something that resonates with the fans, and I think that's, it resonates with really anybody that has, like, a friend that they have a friendly rivalry with. So I think that's an easy story to tell, and I thought they did a good job of that, you know, throughout the match, building up to the eventual finish.
Did you think either of them leaned babyface at any point in the match? Was one of them more of a heel than the other?
You know, I felt that like they did a pretty good job of not really swaying in either direction. Although I will say that just based on what they've been in WWE, just the natural feeling that you get is that Sami Zayn is more of a babyface, whereas Kevin Owens is more of a heel. But I don't think based on what they did in the match itself, you could really say, like, oh, this guy was definitely trying to play this certain role. I thought they did a pretty good job of keeping it right down the middle. I you know, it was pretty even offense. It wasn't like Kevin Owens was beating him pillar to post and then, you know, Sami Zayn had to make his comeback. So I think they did a pretty good job of keeping that ambiguity in the match, so you didn't really know, like, where they're going from here.
Let's go to our first call, and then I want to follow up with some more questions on the Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon developments that led to that built up this match tonight. But let's go to area code 615 first. 615, thanks for calling. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hey, Wade and Mike. This is Kenny from Gallatin, Tennessee. I just got done watching SmackDown, and overall, I thought it was a pretty good show. I tend to like the second hour a lot better than the first hour. And as a matter of fact, I'm watching Daniel Bryan right now. He's kind of got the Big Snacks Challenge. Weird hair, ponytail type of deal. I guess he's like a referee, special guest referee and all that. But, I mean, I tell you, I thought the show was good, but I happen to disagree with the match between Zayn and Owens a little bit. I remember watching the match that they had at Payback a couple of years ago. I thought that was a really good match. But it just seemed like they were kind of going through the motions, you know, trying to tell a story, but in a way that was sort of predictable WWE, where they had someone out in the commentating section and the antagonist challenging the protagonist, you know, to a battle that leads to a DQ scenario. It just seems so predictable to me in the sense of how the outcome was. It's like I knew that when I saw Styles out there after the break, I thought, yeah, I knew where we were going with Fastlane, and here we go again. I guess the only way we have to say about that. I mean, I'm okay with it. I kind of wish it wasn't as predictable as it seemed like, but overall, I kind of felt like that's where we're going, heading since looks like now it's Styles versus Nakamura at WrestleMania. So I'm kind of okay with it. I guess the take is, do you think that they should have, you know, had a clean finish in the match, or do you think the match was warranted to not have a clean finish?
Well, I think if they had a clean finish, then they would have had to do something very different than they planned to at Fastlane, or it would have been pretty convoluted. I would have liked to have seen maybe something a little more creative with the way that they got to that point. I think Sammy turning his back to Kevin Owens and getting in Styles' face and mouthing off to him didn't feel natural to me. It felt like that's what Sammy's supposed to do to lead to the finish, a controversial finish of the match, or to leave him vulnerable for Kevin Owens. And it made me less sympathetic to Sammy as either a heel or a face, just as a wrestler who couldn't keep his focus given the stakes in the match. I if I'm Sammy, I'm going, can we shift this so I don't look like such a fool? That would have been what I would have said during the production, you know, phase of this match. Mike, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think with, you know, having the no contest, it's kind of the story that they needed to tell, because you're going forward with this story where you don't know where Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn stand with one another. And if you had one of those guys win the match clean, then you have one of them facing AJ Styles in the next pay-per-view, and the other guy is kind of on the outside looking in, and I don't really know where he fits in necessarily. Whereas with if you have Owens and Zayn both going for the title, you know where you're going. You know that AJ is probably going to retain and face Nakamura, and you know that Owens and Zayn are going to have these issues that they're going to have to work out. Is it going to lead to a singles match between them at WrestleMania? Is it going to lead to a match where they're teaming up against Shane McMahon and a partner potentially? I think that you have more avenues and more interesting things based on the way that they did this. But I do agree that the finish could have been more creative. Like, you could have had a double pin where they go all out and they take each other out and somehow, some way they pin each other. And you don't have to have the same old tired thing where you have the guy at the announce table getting involved and you have the disqualification and AJ Styles loses his temper and, you know, he ends up costing himself and he has to face both guys at once again. I think that that was a little bit played out, and I think that they could have done it a better way. But I think no matter what, you had to have that match finish with both Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn being in line to receive a title shot.
Kenny, anything else?
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about the end of the U.S. Championship match, where it kind of is alluding to the fact that, hey, maybe we're going to see Randy Orton involved in the U.S. Title picture in the near future. Is that the vibe that you guys thought when you saw, you know, Randy Orton basically RKOing everybody, that, you know, now he's going to be in the hunt for the U.S. Championship? At least I see it that way.
I don't know how he couldn't be now, Kenny. I mean, yeah, if I'm Bobby Roode, if I'm Rusev, I want at Orton. I'm kind of assuming now, Mike, and this is not going out on a limb, you could start watching wrestling tonight and forecast this. There'll be a triple threat match. Randy, Rusev, and Roode at Fastlane, with essentially all three baby faces, even if they're supposedly cast in different ways. And the fans, no matter what they do with Randy Orton, the fans are going to cheer him. No matter what they do with Rusev right now, the fans are cheering him. And Bobby Roode will get his, you know, lukewarm applause that he's getting. You know, they don't have a reason to hate him. They respect him, but I don't think there's a lot of passion for him. So it's if that's what they do, and it's, like I said, that's where everything is pointing, I don't know where the heat is. You know, it feels sort of like something booked by someone who's of the belief that, whoa, in this modern era, we're going to drop the whole, let's give fans a reason to cheer for one guy and give fans a reason to root against somebody else, and we're just going to throw three people out there and have them be ambiguous and contradictory, ignore what the fans are doing in terms of cheering for Rusev, and have Aiden English interfering left and right, and just create a mishmash. This is they've got some time to clear this up and change course, but right now it's a mishmash of fans reacting to characters in a way that might not necessarily match how they're being portrayed on TV.
You know, I think and I agree to a certain extent. I do think that at this point, it's just Randy Orton interjecting himself into the situation. You don't know why. You don't know, you know, the reasoning, the rationale behind anything that's happening. But I think that if you look at the SmackDown roster right now, I don't know what there is for Randy Orton really to do at WrestleMania, except for maybe face Bobby Roode. And for that simple fact, I think it is a good idea to at least get him involved now. And I do agree they're probably going to do a triple threat at the next pay-per-view, because you don't want to give away Randy Orton against Bobby Roode already, although I wouldn't put it past WWE to do that, but you would think that they probably won't do that and they'll save it. And then I think that maybe you have a situation where Bobby Roode cheats to win, and then maybe then you start building up some issues, and then you can have a little bit more of an obvious divide between Randy Orton is the face here and Bobby Roode is the heel, because I think that it's clear as day that Bobby Roode in NXT and Bobby Roode in the main roster are two different guys. In ring, he's good. He's the, you know, essentially the same. But in terms of his character, he's so much better in NXT, and I feel so much more comfortable. Whereas what he is in WWE is he's just that, you know, vanilla baby face that they like to have. So I think that it's a good thing, and I think that Randy Orton's hugely popular. Like, no matter what he does, he gets that huge crowd reaction. I think that could be good and a good catalyst to get Bobby Roode to turn heel. And I think it'll be a good match for WrestleMania too. Those are two guys that I've kind of always looked at. They have that similar in-ring style, and it seems like they would mesh well. So I think that even though right now you don't really have a story, I think that it's a good thing to start building toward for WrestleMania. And I think it'll actually add some meaning to the U.S. title, which it's been missing for a while, in my opinion.
Well, and if they actually do have this lead somewhere where there's a clear heel, a clear baby face, and they're not at war with the fans, and how the fans feel about it, then I'm fine with that. My concern is that they're going to go into this and think, hey, we'll just, you know, sort of let the fans choose, or they'll ignore. And it was frustrating tonight. They're ignoring Rusev and the popularity of Rusev Day. I mean, You have Aiden English insulting the crowd. You have Aiden English doing all the heel moves that heels do, the same thing that Riot Squad did during their match, which is jump on the ring apron, distract the babyface. And it's like they don't hear that the fans just want to cheer Rusev and get behind him. Why do you create this headwind of forcing a heel act, a heel portraying them as heels? And but the thing is, Rusev's not acting like a heel. English is, and Rusev is a de facto heel because he's still hanging out with this guy, letting him try to cheat on his behalf. At least Seth and Roman, even if they're kind of, you know, overreacting in certain ways, at least they're against Jason Jordan cheating on their behalf. They're actual baby faces in that sense. But Rusev is sort of a heel, even though the fans love him, because he's letting Aiden English create distractions, which sometimes backfire. I don't think that gives that – that pushes – it creates a headwind against fans admiring Rusev. Let Rusev be the hero that fans want him to be. And if that means – I would say I think the only guy Randy Orton can get booed against right now is Rusev, because Rusev is so popular and he's fresh that if Orton comes out strong talking about this Rusev Day crap and has an attitude and a chip on his shoulder about it, they can go there and maybe make it work. But I'm fearful, Mike, that they look at Rusev and Orton and they go, well, Orton's the babyface and Rusev's the heel, and we'll have Aiden English do his shenanigans. I just think that's the wrong direction. And again, you're at war with the fans, as Todd Martin says, when you force that storyline that goes against the grain of how the fans organically feel at this moment.
And, you know, I agree. And I think that what Rusev really reminds me of right now is kind of Bad News Barrett, that character, where he was clearly very over with the fans, and the fans wanted to cheer him, and they did cheer him regularly. And what happened with Bad News Barrett is they went against it, and they said, okay, we'll put you in the League of Nations or whatever that stable was, and they totally stripped down everything that made him hugely popular just in the name of being a heel for the sake of being a heel. And I guess it's possible they could do something like that with Rusev, but you see this natural momentum that he's created with the fans, this groundswell that he has, selling all this merchandise, the Rusev Day calendar and the shirt and all that kind of stuff. You think to yourself, how could they possibly not capitalize that and have him turn face? They have been going in that direction, keeping him heel, as you said, you know, all the stuff that Aiden English is doing. So far they haven't made the turn. Conventional wisdom says you have to make the turn eventually. So I guess I'll just assume that they'll make the right decision, but as we've seen, that's not always the case. It's usually not the case, probably.
No, and so let me go to the Shane McMahon, Daniel Bryan discussion that I wanted to have with you, because speaking of which, you have fans who love Daniel Bryan, and WWE seems sort of hellbent on trying to put Bryan in a position to test fan loyalty. Shane, I thought, was pretty likable, and Daniel Bryan was pretty likable, and yet they're both sort of unlikable because they're, I don't know what the purpose of this is yet. And if the idea is, oh, Bryan, you really want to be wrestling, so you're living vicariously through Sammy and KO, fans, you know, go, ooh, that's a low blow, but it's sort of true. Maybe Daniel Bryan isn't making sound decisions. How does that make me feel about him? I don't get what the point of having fans go, I'm not sure if I feel as good about Daniel Bryan as I used to. I don't know where there's business in that. Yes, it fills some TV time with a soap opera, but otherwise, what's the end game? Now, maybe it'll all make sense eventually, but Bryan coming out after the idea is Kevin Owens and Sammy keep getting second chance after second chance after second chance. And if the argument now is, well, yeah, he gave them another chance. So now the fans kind of booed. They were kind of like, we don't want to see this again. I don't think they're anti-Bryan, and you know, you made your case for why the match, you know, sort of makes sense as a match just to get to bridge to WrestleMania, but I think the fans groaned because they're like, again? You know, like, I know they're all good wrestlers, but we'd rather have something fresh, and frankly, I think it'd be better to have AJ defend against the new top contender in a one-off match than, like, for instance, and this is changing things up enough, you'd have to plan a few weeks back, but just go with Rusev and AJ, have them have a classic match, have AJ win, but have AJ raise Rusev's hand and point at this guy going, this guy's great, I get why you guys love him, and give Rusev some momentum by putting him in a main event and have him go 22 minutes with AJ in a great match. And now you've got something with Rusev where you can have Orton turn on heel on Rusev because Orton's mad that Rusev's higher than him in the top 10 list, and now you have a heel and a babyface, everybody's aligned the right way, and you have Rusev with a credibility boost, and you haven't delivered yet another match involving AJ, Sammy, and KO where the fans are kind of groaning. So, you know, I just gave one of, you know, dozens of things you could do to stray away from it for a month. But I don't think fans are turning on Brian, Mike. I think they're turning on these three in a storyline that seems like it'll never end.
Yeah, I agree with that. And the thing, I've thought for a while now that the Brian and Shane McMahon storyline is very bizarre, because you have two guys that are very popular individually. And when they were coexisting and they were being the face commissioner and the face general manager, getting positive reactions, everything seemed to be going well. It seemed to be – it was like SmackDown was its own thing and a departure from Raw, because Raw has kind of always been the one where you have the GM and you have the higher authority figure and you have that bickering and all the issues. And then SmackDown was just with Shane McMahon and Daniel Bryan agreeing and working together. It just felt like that wrestling show. And now it's kind of like they've gone and wrought up SmackDown by doing this. And they both come across, they were, again, both hugely popular. They both do come across as unlikable now, because they're like bickering parents every single week. And you sometimes you don't even know why they're bickering. And most of the time, they're just saying the same things over and over again. And now you get to the situation where, like you said, Shane McMahon talking about Daniel Bryan trying to live vicariously through Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. Almost as if for quite a while now they've been trying to convince fans that they're trending toward getting Daniel Bryan to wrestle again. And that's been, you know, an ongoing debate, I think, on social media. Like, is Daniel Bryan going to wrestle again? Are they going to clear him? I don't have any inside information on that. But me personally, I would be very shocked if WWE would ever allow that to happen, knowing what the diagnosis was at one point and knowing how seriously they take head injuries, as they should. I would be shocked if that happens. So if Daniel Bryan isn't going to wrestle, then I struggle to understand what the entire storyline is, because Daniel Bryan, I mean, Shane McMahon can't get his comeuppance for being against Daniel Bryan, and Daniel Bryan can't get his comeuppance for kind of acting somewhat heelish by siding with Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. So I think that you're damned if you do and damned if you don't in this situation. And if you don't have Daniel Bryan wrestle, then I don't think that you're going to have a good payoff, because the only payoff you could have if Daniel Bryan doesn't wrestle, somebody wrestling on Daniel Bryan's behalf against Shane McMahon. I don't think that really solves anything in this entire storyline.
No, and I don't think it serves the storyline either, when it almost seemed as if Shane was about to clear Daniel Bryan to wrestle at one point. You know, right. When Shane said, I know what you'd love more than anything.
It's pulling at the heartstrings of the fans that want that.
Well,
you know?
It is, and it's also, you know, if somebody says to you, hey, cake and ice cream for dessert, I'm sorry. No. It's stale carrot cake. And not that Kevin Owens and Sammy are stale carrot cake. But, you know, like, if I had more time, I could come up with a slightly better food analogy. But this idea of teasing fans with something that would be incredible in Daniel right. Bryan, and instead, oh, never mind, I just was trying to make everyone feel bad for Brian. I wasn't really hinting that he's cleared, but it did seem like this big moment that was about to happen. Well, if that's what you want, then you're cleared, and the crowd pops, and now it all, you know, well, it still wouldn't all make sense, but at least it would be something new and novel. So, yeah, I don't know. Anyway, let's take another call here. Let's go to area code 516. Please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hey, Wade, long time looking forward to making this call. Frank from Farmingdale, how are you?
Hey, Frank, good to talk to you. I see you on Twitter all the time.
Yes, good to finally talk to you, too. And thank God the Super Bowl is over. Yeesh, we could all get back to our normal lives, right?
Mm-hmm, yes. Yes.
By the way, let me tell you, I'm not patronizing you when I tell you that the Vikings are my second team, because they actually were. Back in high school, I had an Anthony Carter jersey. I mean, we're going old school now.
Yeah.
And I remember when, I think it was Tommy Kramer was the quarterback around then.
Yep.
And then Wade Wilson took over. So that's how far I go back.
Wow. That's going way back. As a person named Wade, I thought it was really cool that my team had a quarterback named Wade, because I didn't know a lot of – there was Wade Boggs and Wade Wilson, and that's about it. So it was pretty cool.
There you go. And I regret, too. I had a Dante Culpepper jersey recently, and I got rid of it. Now I regret it, because I could have used it this year, you know, during the playoffs.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So,
Frank, let me tell you, you're over-modulating a little bit. We're getting some static, so just move your mouth away from the mouthpiece a little bit. It might help. It could just be the phone connection, too, but – just in case that helps.
Yeah, it could be. How about now, Wade?
Keep going. A little more. A little more sample.
You know what? Let me go on the maybe the Bluetooth will work out, because you know what it is? I'm on speakerphone.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say this to all our callers. If you can not call us on speakerphone, I can hear you fine, but for the sake of those who are trying to listen at a health club or on the subway, just to clear, you can call and, you know, spend 2 minutes with us directly into the mouthpiece. Better.
Yeah. How about now, Wade? Is that better?
Yeah. We don't hear the overmodulating anymore.
Awesome. Yeah, cool. I'm on the Bluetooth. And by the way, hey, Mike, how you doing tonight? I've read some of your stuff on Bleacher Report and stuff like that, so it's good to talk to you as well.
Oh, thank you very much. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, no problem. No, I'm glad to finally do it. I'm glad you brought back the call-in feature, Wade. I was hoping that would come back at some point. So,
yeah, we definitely had requests for it. I'm glad we can make it work.
Absolutely. Well, I don't want to take up too much of your time. I'm sure you got other guys calling. But the first thing I wanted to hit on, I started watching a little late, but I don't know if you talked about this yet, but the AJ Styles Shinsuke Nakamura dynamic, you know, I think the run up to WrestleMania is going to be a little challenging, you know, with the promos and stuff like that. You know, Shinsuke's mic skills leave a little bit to be desired, but I mean, for me, that's okay, because that's not why I'm watching Shinsuke. I'm watching Shinsuke for what he can do in the ring, you know. And the short and sweet stuff is kind of good. And that's kind of what I like about him, you know. But I almost feel like they're kind of dumbing it down a little bit with this, I'm going to beat you at WrestleMania. I'm going to beat you at WrestleMania. I mean, we heard that about 3 times last week. And he only said it once tonight, but I feel like it was 5 times. I mean, do you feel like maybe they're trying to dumb it down a little bit? And maybe there should be a little more, like, a little more of a stare-off, a little more of a stare-down, just kind of keep a little intrigue on the match. You know, am I being too analytical about
no,
it?
No,
am I on to something?
No, I'm eager to respond, because I'm with you. And I am hoping, Frank and Mike, that they come up with something different and better as this storyline progresses. Shinsuke's background is compelling. There's a real story there they can use as a foundation of his. They can use reality as a foundation and embellish as they see fit, because it's pro wrestling. But they could talk about getting to know Shinsuke, the path he took. And I know they're shy to talk too much about New Japan, given that New Japan is a streaming service and, you know, they kind of see him as a threat. They're at that level, sort of like TNA for years, where they won't talk about them, but they'll talk about others, although that'll probably change with ROH now with their streaming service. But I would like to see WWE work hard now that Shinsuke is a WrestleMania main eventer, a Royal Rumble winner. We need to know more about Shinsuke. The viewers deserve to be told what his journey is, the journey he's been on, and connect with him more on what this would mean to him. They can love AJ, but still have a real appreciation for Shinsuke. It's kind of like a Super Bowl when your team is not in it, which my whole adult life I'm very familiar with. And you end up wanting to learn about the two teams if you're not sure which one you want to root for, and kind of come up with reasons. And sometimes, you know, you end up really invested in just seeing the game play out. You don't have someone you're really hoping for, like your home team, but you get to know both teams enough that you're interested in how they react to the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. And they're not doing that yet with AJ and Shinsuke. Now, maybe it's not time yet, and that time will come. I'm with you, Frank. I hope they do more than just Shinsuke walking up and kind of mumbling, I'm going to beat you at WrestleMania. Because that just, I think people will be sick of Shinsuke by then if that's literally all that they do with him. Mike, your thoughts. Are you more optimistic that they'll come up with something?
You know what? I actually am a little bit. And the way I see this playing out is, for now, Shinsuke Nakamura has to be somewhat of a background figure, because he doesn't get that title shot until WrestleMania. And AJ Styles, before that, he has business that he has to take care of with Kevin Owens and with Sami Zayn. So the way I see it is, this is kind of their way of keeping Shinsuke Nakamura in the forefront of your mind, but at the same time, he's not really facing AJ Styles yet. So he kind of says, you know, these little jabs backstage to AJ Styles. They keep it simple. And I think you do have to keep it simple with Nakamura to a certain extent. And it's almost can be like in, you know, football, when you have a big game coming up in 2 weeks and you have that trap game before then, and it can always be like AJ Styles is looking ahead to Shinsuke Nakamura at WrestleMania, looking ahead to that big showdown. But, you know, you have to focus on what you have on your plate right now, and it can be Shinsuke Nakamura playing these mind games and trying to get him to maybe slip up. I think that that's an interesting story that you can tell just from that little thing, just a little thing, Shinsuke Nakamura saying one thing every week. I think that you can do that. And at the same time, though, what I would do is have vignettes for Shinsuke Nakamura, have sit-down interviews with Nakamura in that type of setting. I think that he can cut a better promo where he's just having a conversation rather than cutting a wrestling promo. Those kind of sit-down conversations that you have with Brock Lesnar for a week when he's not on TV, and you record it beforehand and then you play it on Raw. Do stuff like that for Shinsuke Nakamura so people are still realizing how important this guy is, realizing this is a guy that's going to be in one of the main events of WrestleMania, and at the same time, have him having these little interactions with AJ Styles. Then once you get past Fastlane, that's when you can go full bore with Shinsuke Nakamura and AJ Styles and have actual conflict between these two guys. But I think that you have to keep it simple for the next month at least. It's a necessity because he's not facing AJ Styles yet, and you have to hammer that home into people's heads that it's not a foregone conclusion yet. He could potentially lose the title, even though we probably know he's not going to. That's the story they have to tell.
Yeah, no, it is. And what I'd like to see, and this is, I think, the dimension that's been missing with Shinsuke, is treat him like a serious adult human being and a high-end professional. I mean, he's treated as this childlike curiosity who's just hanging around backstage, saying simple phrases, gyrating in weird ways. And it's fine, but they got to sit down and come up with something more with him, and not more cartoonish. Like, give us a glimpse into him as an adult human being. And, you know, the Usos are doing that right now. I'm sure we'll get into that as the show progresses. We're learning more about them as human beings. There's some actual authentic moments. I thought it jumped out when the crowd chanted Rusev Day, and it was unexpected, not part of the script. And Shane McMahon took it in, had a little smile, and said, duly noted. And I thought, hey, that was well handled, you know? I've noted it. Thank you. Now we'll move on to the next thing. He didn't seem irritated. And then when the crowd chanted yes later to Daniel Bryan, Daniel Bryan said, I hope you're duly noting that too, Shane. Total improvise. It's just you get pulled in more when you think something is happening that wasn't written and memorized. And I would like to see with Shinsuke, even if it means it's a translator for a sit-down segment, get to know Shinsuke, let him speak in his native language. They let Asuka do that. And have a translator and have him say more. And by the way, keep the pow, bang, bam graphics off the screen as he talks. keep it real.
Please.
Yes. Oh, God. I'm going to get into that, too, I think.
Clip art.
Yes. So yeah, I think you're right. I mean, we shouldn't be too pessimistic that won't happen. Hopefully something will, maybe something better that we haven't brought up right here. I'm all for that, too. Just throwing ideas out and hoping that they, you know, do something along the lines of adding a dimension to his character so he's not this childlike curiosity gyrating and saying sentence fragments. And it's just not something WWE is particularly good at or enthusiastic about, and it's not their go-to formula for getting somebody over. What do we know about Bobby Roode? Nothing. He's glorious. That's literally it. Like, they've done nothing for us. We don't know anything about him. They don't do anything. It's just insane. They have all this TV time, and they have these characters, and we don't know anything about them. It's so surface level. They should do better. It's not that hard. In some ways, it's not easy because it breaks from their kind of simple formula, but that's people want to get to know who they're cheering for and booing. That's why 2 weeks of Super Bowl hype is all about getting to know the coach and the quarterback and the journeys that they're on. WWE needs to be better storytellers about the journeys that wrestlers are on in a sports-like way, not just cartoonish pancake stunts and, you know, sing, you know, oh, he can sing, we'll have him sing. Oh, people like his Glorious song, we'll have him say Glorious. Let's get past that and get to more stuff. They really can aim higher, and I hope they do. Frank,
they do it in NXT. I'll just say that.
Exactly.
They find a way.
Yes. I mean, I watch NXT, and I just smile and nod and go, see, this is what I'm – you know, when I talk about how I think WWE can improve a lot on the show, it's not like hasn't been done before, and it's not just, oh, those are old-school ideas from the past. They won't translate today. It's like when I watch NXT, it's this validation that there's other people who think like I do and believe like I do that there are things that have always been done in various territories and promotions that have been successful that have engaged the fans and drawn money that WWE just is in this pattern of not doing. In NXT, you're absolutely right, Mike. They do it, and they do it brilliantly, and it is a great example. Frank, I was going to say, you started this off by saying, I'm glad we can all move on from football now. And what have Mike and I done? Like, use 17 football analogies. So, mostly me, but so sorry about that.
I was wondering about that, Wade. I said, wait a second. For someone who didn't want to talk about the Super Bowl, you actually brought up a lot of analogies. What's going on there?
Well, you know what they say about race car drivers? They're told, don't tell yourself, don't hit the wall. Tell yourself, stay on the track. Because you have a tendency to do whatever you're thinking, whether it's a positive or negative. So had you said, it's great that baseball season is starting soon, then I would have said, made baseball analogies. But by you saying, I'm glad football's in the past, now football's on my mind, so what do? I talk about football. I'm officially blaming you.
Wait, the next time I call, I'll talk about baseball. How about that?
All right, sounds good. You probably don't want to talk about basketball. You probably don't want to talk about basketball if you're a Knicks fan.
Ugh. Oh, my God. I had the game on for about maybe 30 minutes tonight, and once Porzingis got hurt, I was just like, okay.
I didn't even
have it on, because usually I have it on my iPad when I'm watching SmackDown or Raw or whatever, and once Porzingis got hurt, I was just, okay, this is it. It's over.
You know, I saw it trending on Twitter, and I was just like, okay, he's in the Eastern Conference, no threat to my Timberwolves. Until the finals. I can dream. And I was like, oh God, either he's having a great game or something bad happened. And I was just heartbroken seeing that. And then there's a player like standing over him crying, you know, when he was down. I mean, it's just the New York fans are.
I think it was cancer. It was Enos.
Yep, absolutely. It's just, I mean, there's been so many injuries, you know, sports fans, you're going to get injuries, but it's never easy to watch a player go down like that. And the pain he was in, and the agony, and the disappointment, all. Ugh, it's just hard to watch. Anyway, on that cheerful note, go ahead, Frank.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was going to, let me go to the AJ Styles stuff, because I'm actually going to steal an idea from Greg Parks that he tweeted out a little while ago. Why not have at, Fastlane, why not have, I think he said have Owens and Zayn go at it in the opening match, or maybe even AJ and, one of them go at it in the opening match. And then the winner of that faces, who's left over in the main event. Say, let's say AJ and Sammy go at it at the beginning, and then AJ wins. He faces Owens in the main event. Because I understand they don't do triple threat matches enough, so we have to do them. Sarcasm. when I heard that, I said, it's funny. When I heard the triple threat announcement, I said, I got to call Wade, because I swear to God, if I hear another triple threat match or another fatal four-way match announced, I'm going to go crazy. It's they do it every week. They do it every time, and enough is enough. I mean, get creative, for crying out loud.
And I mean, look at how well Johnny Gargano worked, the main event against Andrade Cien Almas. It's like one-on-one. It just works. Two-on-two works. Do three-on-three if you want to. But one-on-one-on-one, it's overdone. I mean, it's an overdone thing. It wasn't even a match until the early mid-90s with Paul Heyman and ECW, and that happened organically with Terry Funk and Sabu and Tommy Dreamer. And now it's just there's a couple generations of fans think it's always been a thing, and it hasn't always been a thing.
To me, it's just a matter of convenience for the WWE, for all intents and purposes, they could just be doing this so that, AJ pins Sammy, because it's not going to hurt Sammy to take the loss, and then we move on to WrestleMania. Maybe Kevin Owens does something. I don't, who knows? But, I mean, what do you think of that idea? I mean, I guess it's a moot point now that, they announced the triple threat match. But would that have maybe served things better to have, let's just say, I'll throw it out there as Kevin versus Sammy at the beginning of the night, and then the winner of that match faces AJ later in the night for the title? Would that have worked better?
Then what happens at Fastlane?
No, that's what I'm saying. At Fastlane.
Oh, you're saying
hold
both
off
of those
on the whole dynamic.
Gotcha. Okay.
It's almost the WrestleMania 10 idea with it was Luger and Yoko first, and then it was Yoko and Brett later.
I'll just say, I'm not, and this is short, then I'll throw you, Mike. I don't think having somebody have to wrestle earlier in the night as a heel to earn a shot against a fresh babyface later in the night is that there's some issues there, because now it looks like AJ gets to sit and watch as, you know, two heels battle it out. They get worn out, even though they have a couple hours to rest. I think that's one reason to be against that as the solution to what they did tonight.
The one thing I'll say about it is they've done every single combination known to man in this feud of each guy facing each other, a handicap match. Literally the only thing they haven't done yet is the triple threat. So I think that's probably why they did it. Like, I don't know that there's anything that they could do that would make people over the moon excited for this at this point. So I think it's just kind of, it's almost like splitting hairs, I feel like, because no matter what they do, if they move forward with this feud, people are just going to be like, all right, we've kind of seen it all. Let's just move forward. Let's get to WrestleMania, no matter what they do.
If you want to see where Frank listens to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, look up hashtag WKPWP on Twitter. That's where all of you are encouraged to post pictures of where you are in the world and what you're doing when you listen to this show. Hashtag WKPWP, as in Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. Frank, good to talk to you. Hope you'll call back.
Absolutely, Wade. Great talking to you, Mike, you as well. You guys have a great night, all right?
Thanks.
Thanks, Frank.
All right, we got to cut to a break, and when we come back, we'll talk to our on-site correspondent, eyewitness in Kansas City to SmackDown, and also we'll get his take on 205 Live. If you're going to attend a future wrestling event, we'd love to publish results of the show and your experience at the show on our website, pwtorch.com. Send results to pwtorch at pwtorch.com. This includes WWE events and other events, whether it's ROH, New Japan, indie events, and more. Send results to pwtorch at pwtorch.com. If you're attending a future Raw or SmackDown and can be an on-site correspondent for this program, send a note to me at WadeKellerPodcast at pwtorch.com. That's WadeKellerPodcast at pwtorch.com. And just put the name of the city and the date in the subject line so it can stay organized and get back to you about joining us on the program, and you can share your experience. Also, hashtag WKPWP on Twitter if you want to share a photo of where you listen to this program. And you can also react to the shows with other listeners of this program. That's hashtag WKPWP. You can support PWTorch.com when you shop Amazon. Just go to PWTorch.com/Amazon. When you're about to shop at Amazon, click the Amazon logo. You're right at Amazon where you're headed anyway, but we get a commission on any purchases you make on that trip. We've had this relationship with Amazon for years now, and we really appreciate those of you who are participating, and we invite all of you to join them. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon when you're about to shop at Amazon. All right, we're back, and we are joined by our on-site correspondent, Hayden from Kansas City. Mike Chiari is still with me from Ring Rust Radio. Hayden, thanks for taking time out to talk to us about your experience at the show tonight.
Yes, no problem. It was going to be one of my first times ever going to a SmackDown Live show, so I figured why not get my input and see what I saw.
Excellent. Very cool. Well, first things first, was there anything that took place before SmackDown went on the air? Any dark match or anything?
Yes, there was a quick 5-minute dark match between Natalya and Becky Lynch.
Oh, okay.
Becky Lynch went over. It was nothing special. A couple setup matches. Becky Lynch made a comeback and got a finish off.
All right, very good. And was there anything after 205 Live concluded, a dark match or anything?
Yes, there was. We had a tag team match with Shinsuke Nakamura and AJ Styles versus Jinder Mahal and Baron Corbin.
All right, and how'd that end?
That ended with the faces going over, AJ and Shinsuke, AJ getting the forearm on Mahal. Although, judging by the reaction tonight, I don't know if they were particularly the faces.
You don't know if Nakamura and AJ were faces?
Well, they were certainly the faces, but they weren't they didn't get the loudest cheer of the match.
Oh, really? Who got the loudest cheer?
Was it Corbin at home, I guess?
Yes, Corbin got a massive pop. First.
Oh, wow. And I bet that's why they kept him off TV.
Sounds like it.
Yeah, you know, they don't want the heel to get cheered, even though it would be, you know, kind of cool TV to have him get the biggest reaction of the night. But it's okay for Seth to get cheered in Iowa as a babyface, but Jinder is a heel. Baron is a heel. You know, it can be counterproductive. So, or they can just send Triple H out to celebrate with him. I don't know if that made sense. All right. Very good. Yeah, that kind of explains where Baron was. Although we didn't talk about this, Mike, and we'll talk about the top 10 list more later. Jinder Mahal not on the top 10 list, and you know, former world champion, not respected by his colleagues in the locker room, obviously. So
because he's mean.
Yes, says mean things. So, Hayden, who got the biggest babyface pop of the night, or what group of what 1, 2, 3 wrestlers were the most over above everyone else besides Baron Corbin in the dark match?
In all honesty, tonight was a little lacking in the wrestling department. So there was only a couple guys who came out that got pretty decent pops. Shane came out and got a decent pop. Daniel came out and probably got close to one of the bigger pops of the night. AJ came out. I'd say of all the wrestlers to come out tonight, I'd say AJ got the biggest reaction.
Who got a bigger reaction, Shane or Daniel Bryan?
Daniel did. It's undeniable that people still remember who he is and are excited to see him on TV. So
yeah,
he got a nice loud pop. He got an immediate yes chant going, and it lasted all through his music.
Talk about the dynamic between Rusev and Bobby Roode when we talk about babyface pops and crowds being into a wrestler. I didn't come across super clear to me on TV, so I'm kind of curious, being in the building during ring intros, during the match, and after the finish, what was the ratio of cheers for Roode and Rusev? It seemed like Roode didn't get much of a response during ring intros.
During ring intros, it was certainly Roode was a little flat on the response on that, but... And during the match itself, it was about 75-25, the 75 going for Rusev and 25 going for Roode. There was a large pocket of Bobby Roode fans behind me in the show tonight. And other than that, there was a couple kids chanting for him and a couple women chanting for him. But most of the crowd was so over for Rusev Day. If you watch the beginning of the show, there was a Rusev Day chant going during the opening match promo.
So, oh, I know. Yeah.
That was, I think, what everyone was most excited to see tonight.
Do you think it's crazy that they're still trying to have him play the heel role in that Aiden English is interfering on his behalf? And I mean, I know Rusev is playing into the crowd cheers, but I sort of feel like they should just go all in with Rusev Day as a babyface. It seems like they're working against the tide right now.
I don't disagree with that statement at all. The people who are cheering for Bobby Roode just like Bobby Roode, but I think if Rusev was a face, they would have cheered for him. They were eager to pop if he were to win the title tonight, and someone behind me said quite clearly to a friend of his that if Rusev gets the title tonight, there's no way they can deny the fact that he's one of the most popular guys on the roster, and they'd have to probably turn him face for that. So that, and then when the match concluded and Bobby had won, and it was kind of sealed in their face that they didn't really want to turn Rusev's face yet.
Yeah, definitely not. Orton, I assume, got a big pop. How did he compare to, like, AJ and Brian?
In terms of pop for the night, I'd say Randy got the biggest pop of the night. People weren't expecting him to come out, and I think RKO, every single person in the ring, it was obvious that because of that surprise factor and because of who Randy is, there's a lot of people quite surprised to see him out there, and I think that got a massive reaction tonight.
Mike, what have you got for our correspondent, Hayden?
Yeah, well, you know, over the past several weeks, it feels like SmackDown's really been dominated by the issues between Shane McMahon and Daniel Bryan, and then the issues between AJ Styles and Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. It's kind of all been intertwined. And I think, again, tonight you had that opening segment, you had the main event match, you had stuff in between. From your perspective, being in the crowd, did you feel like the crowd was really into the interactions between those guys? Or did you feel like maybe during the match and during the promos, there was a sense of kind of being a little bit tired and a little bit, you know, weary of this feud because it's been going on for so long?
I wouldn't say there was a feeling of being tired or weary in the crowd tonight. The crowd was quiet, but I think it was because there wasn't a lot to get them hot. There wasn't a lot that went on between the scenes. There wasn't a whole lot of wrestling in the show tonight. And, the crowd started off harder than I think it ended. And the build-up to the match between Sammy and Kevin, as well as the conversations between AJ, Brian, and Shane, I think a lot of people were just ready for the match to happen, and I don't think there was a whole lot of... I think they were just expecting to hear the same things they've been hearing a while now, and that's what they got, so...
Yeah, I think you're trailing off there, and like, yeah, that's what they got. You know, I think that's kind of how the fans feel. Yeah, it's, you know, more of the same. You know, it's nothing shocking. Yeah. Just, yeah, more what they thought they'd get. How about Charlotte? What did she get a star reception? You didn't list her in the you know, initially in terms of pops. How did hers compare to the top names you mentioned so far?
She got the biggest pop of the women by far tonight, and it wasn't even close. Not even Becky with the opening dark match. It was quite starkly contrast. She got the biggest pop of all the women tonight, but I still think it was rather lacking in just overall excitement. But she did get the biggest pop of all the women.
How about compared to AJ or Orton?
In comparison to AJ Orton, I think she got nearly as big a pop of AJ when he first came out during the opening segment.
Mm-hmm.
In comparison to Orton, I think, kind of blew everyone else out the building because everyone was, not a single person in the building was prepared for him to show up.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. The surprise aspect. How about Gable and Benjamin? Did the crowd seem into them or were they sort of checked out?
Well, before the Gable and Benjamin match took place, there was a quick promo by them on the TV that I don't know if you guys all got.
Mm-hmm. The bulletin board and the tag teams are jokes and clowns.
Yes. Okay. You did get to see that. Yeah. Seeing that, a lot of people I saw a lot of people turning heads, kind of laughing to each other. The camera held on their faces a little long. Everyone was kind of in it, like just kind of laughing at how the promo went. And, I think when they came out in general, the crowd was pretty flat. And especially because they cut for commercial break in the middle of their entrance. And so when they came back for them, the crowd was flat. They weren't even making the sound.
Mike, do you have another follow-up for Hayden?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you mentioned a couple times it was kind of light on wrestling, the show. But I think for my money, the segment that kind of stood out for me was the Usos promo. I thought that was a really well done promo, sent a really good message, told a lot about, you know, what they're trying to get across with their characters. How did that promo come across to you in the crowd? How did you feel the crowd reacted to that?
I actually feel bad for not mentioning the promo. The promo tonight was fantastic. And though the crowd wasn't super loud during the whole promo bit, they were so enthralled. There was people making comments and being quiet off under the side about it. They were just so into the promo, and everyone was looking to each other after it happened. Quite impressed.
What was the size of the crowd like tonight?
It was a full house. It took them a few minutes once the show got started to finally completely fill up. But once they did, it was a full show.
Wow, that's good. That's good. And what did you pay for your ticket? And where'd you sit?
My ticket, I got a floor seat, so I paid $100 for mine.
And are you happy with the price you paid for the experience you had in that spot?
Yeah, I'd say I was pretty happy.
Okay, good.
The one downside to my seat on the floor is that there was a lot of bodies, and there was basically almost every time the building was packed around my area. It was tough for me to see at times, but I was happy I was as close as I was.
So let's shift gears, unless there's anything else from SmackDown, and talk about 205 Live. I saw just a little bit of it in the background as we've been doing the show. Your take on the arrival of Mark Andrews and Roderick Strong and anything else that jumped out as a surprise? What would you think?
Mark Andrews promo got no reaction because I think a lot of people don't know who he is who watch WWE, who would watch 205 Live or stay after, which is kind of sad for me knowing how talented of a wrestler Mark Andrews is. But he didn't get much of a reaction. But when Roddy got his promo on TV, there was quite a few claps in the background. And there were quite a few people saying his name, yelling his name in the background. They were quite eager and excited to see him debut.
What did you think of the overall production of 205 Live yourself, and what was the crowd like at the start of 205 Live and then by the end?
The crowd at the start of 205 Live was quite quiet. The opening match between Lince and Kalisto never really got the crowd going. The only few things that got any audible response from them was the Lucha chants from Kalisto. Other than that, they were pretty flat, especially for that match. And then for the way the show ended, that match ended, There was a little bit of a small botch by Kalisto on a reverse Hurricane Rana, and that went a little poorly, and the crowd kind of oohed at that. Other than that, the match just kind of ended. But the final match between Roddy and Hideo, the crowd was also started off quiet for that, but the match itself was an absolute bruiser. It's one of the most physical matches I've seen on 205 Live yet, and one of the best matches I've seen both of those two put together, even since their NXT days. It was a fantastic match. The only downside was is a lot of people weren't getting into it, but once the match started really picking up, there was quite a few false finishes, there was quite a few reactions, and when that happened, by that, the end of the time, there was a "This is awesome" chant, there was a standing ovation at the end of the match. It was quite a good, it was a really, really great performance, and I think they earned, I think Roddy especially, and Hideo earned a lot of respect from people's eyes from that match.
Very cool. Oh. All right, well, we lost our connection to our on-site correspondent, so we appreciate Hayden joining us. And we might as well get into a little plug from Mike here. Talk about your program, Ring Rust Radio, and where people can not only listen to you, but maybe read some of your writings on wrestling.
So Ring Rust Radio, every week we're breaking down the happenings primarily in WWE, pay-per-views, Raw, SmackDown, NXT. T 205 Live, essentially everything happening on WWE programming. And we also get into, you know, the independent scene where we talk about New Japan and Impact Wrestling, ROH. And we try to do it in a fun and entertaining way. And, you know, there's a lot of bickering, there's a lot of back and forth, there's a lot of name calling. But at the end of the day, we're also breaking down these shows and hopefully trying to give ideas on what they can do better and saying what they've done well, if anything, and just trying to do it in a really fun and interactive way. And also interviews.
Will this lead to one of you getting dumped from the show and threatening to attack the other one in the street since you guys are bickering on the air?
To be honest, we make threats like that every single week. So I think we were Corey Graves and Booker T before they ever had any kind of issue. But so if that's not a plug to watch or to listen, then I don't know what is. But we also do interviews, you know, on a regular basis. And you can find us on Blog Talk Radio. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, pretty much anywhere that you listen to your podcast. And also you can read all of my writings on WWE and really any sport under the sun at bleachreport.com.
Excellent. Thank you, Mike. We'll be back right after this with the mailbag segment. Some good emails, including a lot on the top 10 list. If you enjoy our approach to covering professional wrestling here on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, I invite you to become a PW Torch VIP member and experience all our coverage throughout the week. I'm part of about 12 other podcasts per week that are VIP exclusive, including the post-pay-per-view roundtables, and I host shows with Bruce Mitchell and Todd Martin, and I do the every single day solo Wade Keller Hotline, plus other VIP podcast formats. And now the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show and Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. All four shows per week are ad-free and plug-free for VIP members. That's a new 2018 feature, and it's something that people wanted, and we have delivered. So VIP members now get ad-free editions, not just of the PW Torch livecasts, which has been the case all along, but also the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, all four shows per week, along with all the livecasts, ad-free and plug-free. Also, VIP after-shows that are exclusively for our members. But it's not all about podcasts that come out during the week. It's also about the archives that you gain access to, dating back to retro radio shows in the early 1990s. In fact, a new retro radio show from the 1990s is dropped every Thursday night for VIP members. Sometimes I'm a guest on that show, so you can hear what I was saying about things decades ago going on in the world of professional wrestling. Also, you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and you get access to our archives, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly newsletter with fascinating insider perspective and hard-hitting editorials, along with long-form insider interviews with some of pro wrestling's biggest names, over 1,500 back issues dating back to the late 1980s, all available as soon as you go VIP. There's so much more that comes with the membership. Go check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. Rates as low as $8.25 per month on average. That's pwtorch.com/govip. All right, we're back for the mailbag segment of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. Don't forget to give us a 5-star rating at Apple Podcasts. If you get a chance, just search Wade Keller. You'll see the same logo, one in red for these post shows after Raw and SmackDown, and one in blue for the flagship on Thursday in the interview show on Friday. And hope you will click on both of those in Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star rating. If you think we don't deserve it, email me. Let me know why. KellerWade@gmail.com. Actually, KellerWade@pwtorch.com is even better. All right, let's go to the mailbag and begin with a question from Joe about what we talked about in segment one. And we'll tie a ribbon around this with Joe's million-dollar question. What is the eventual payoff for the Shane Daniel Bryan storyline as Daniel Bryan isn't able to wrestle anymore? We kind of talked around it a little bit, but Mike, do you have a theory on what the intended end game is and if they'll get to it?
You know, it's a really hard call. And again, I think that the end game that everybody wants and the ideal end game would be Daniel Bryan against Shane McMahon. But just my gut tells me that they're not going to go in that direction. They're not going to have Daniel Bryan wrestle. I think a little clue into that is the fact that Daniel Bryan is at WrestleMania Access. He's a Sunday signing. Traditionally, they don't have people that they plan on having wrestle do the Sunday signings because it's before WrestleMania. So I think that there's a lot of things telling me that they would not allow Daniel Bryan to wrestle. So I think that it has to be some kind of a situation where it's Shane McMahon against, you know, somebody representing Daniel Bryan. So I guess right now my guess would be they'll do Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens against Shane McMahon and someone. And I guess that's your payoff. But again, based on the way they're making this all about Daniel Bryan clashing with Shane McMahon, I don't think it's really a satisfactory endgame. I think that everybody wants Daniel Bryan against Shane McMahon because of what they're doing. And if they don't get it, no matter what it is, they're going to be disappointed.
Well, they've been announcing Daniel Bryan as a special referee at some SmackDown events. So maybe that is the that's the payoff, that Daniel Bryan is special referee. And then in the end, does he turn heel on Shane and a partner? Or does he, you know, inside with KO and Sammy? Or do KO and Sammy use him all along and he gets, you know, Shane gets proven right?
I think there's probably something to that. I think that's a good idea. I mean, again, not the ideal scenario because I don't think that's what anybody wants, but I think that's the best you can do if you're not going to have Daniel Bryan actually wrestle in a match.
I agree. All right, just a note on yesterday's show, we talked about, or our on-site correspondent talked about Undertaker and some American flag T-shirts. John Garcia said that he saw those same Undertaker American flag shirts at Survivor Series in Houston and at Raw in San Antonio last month. So they are not a new item. We weren't sure yesterday. Also, he talked about how you mentioned they wouldn't triple book Roman Reigns to come out last night. He said, that reminded me of the worst event I ever went to, and I think it was a San Antonio Raw in 2015 when Reigns was booked in 3 matches that night. Needless to say, it was the most boring and slow event I've ever attended. Combine that with the ill-fated dark match between Samoa Joe and Tyson Kidd. Ooh. And the WWE Jetsons crossover commercial being repeated led to a rough night. He says, I'm enjoying my new double feed experience. Have a great evening. Thank you, John. Appreciate it. Our email, by the way, if you want to contribute, you can ask questions about Raw and SmackDown, but you can also respond to things that we say here on the show, either the post shows or the flagship or the interviews, and contribute your thoughts or corrections or additional information. That's always helpful, too. Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. All right. We have not talked about the top 10 list. And John D. begins by saying, Ty Dillinger in the top 10. At number 10, which is lame, but no mention of Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, or Rusev. Even Baron Corbin should be ranked above him. I give up. Follow me on Twitter at TheWadeKeller. Follow our brand at PWTorch. Like us on Facebook at Facebook.com/PWTorch. And friend me on Facebook at Facebook.com/WadeKellerTorch. Mike, your thoughts on the first top 10 list?
Well, when they announced it last week, I kind of rolled my eyes because TNA had something similar a couple of years ago, like some like a top 5 contenders list, as if they were trying to be like boxing or like UFC, and it never really made sense. It never really went anywhere, and I just don't think it really works necessarily in professional wrestling, and I think that this is kind of an example of that. It's like they explained the rules last week. It's based on athletic ability and popularity and things that don't really...
Locker room leadership.
Yeah, locker room leadership. So basically they're saying it's a popularity contest, and that's why it's all faces on the list. And I think that the only reason that they have it and the only thing they're going to use it for is so heels can say that they're spurned and that it's awful how nobody respects me and this is how I get treated on SmackDown Live, and they can have, you know, they can whine and cry and maybe get what they want out of it because they're not being treated properly as a member of SmackDown. I think that could be something like a rallying cry for Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn because they weren't included on it, and that can kind of be a thing for maybe a point of contention between them and Daniel Bryan moving forward if they start to have cracks in their relationship. I just think it's all something, it's all leading to that type of stuff, and I think it's just, it's not necessary. You don't need it. I mean, it's very easy to create conflict between heels and faces. You don't have to have such a convoluted thing that really doesn't make sense, and I don't think anybody was clamoring to have a top 10 list on SmackDown or Raw or any wrestling show for that matter, so I'm just not a big fan of it, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, I became, it's weird, I became a bigger fan of it when I saw that it would be wrestler voting in the sense that at least it was different, and it gives them an excuse to not have to do what I think worked against some of the other lists working, which is having it seem official, where you're actually having to keep track of wins and losses, and you're actually having to, you know, put a list out and have it stand up to the scrutiny of fans who, in many cases, pay more attention to the product than the people who work for the company putting the list together. So by saying it's wrestler voting, they can just get into all the politics of it. It's a popularity contest. So I'm willing to give it a chance. Now, that said, the Ty Dillinger thing was stupid. It's just so stupid. They can't help themselves. Does it count as a pun? Maybe it's not a pun. It's a tired, played-out joke, and it makes a mockery of something that could have been kind of fun in a more serious way. The odds of Ty ending up at number 10 is very low unless...
In everything.
Yes. Unless
Royal Rumble twice.
I know. Well, there's no way to explain that. But here, you could say, like, this is what I would have been okay with this. If Shane McMahon went up to Daniel Bryan and said, man, that top 10 list has created quite an uproar here in the locker room. A lot of guys wondering, you know, why they weren't ranked higher. And some people happy that they got so many votes. But Shane looks at Daniel and goes, did Ty really end up at number 10? How did that happen? Like, acknowledge it and then have Daniel Bryan say, well, yeah, because he was listed number 10 on every ballot. I think everybody got together as a joke on Ty to just rank him there. And, you know, like, just, you know what? Just have some explanation for it. We're supposed to buy that as, oh, that was hilarious, even though it made no sense and there was no explanation. It's not funny. It's not even third-grade humor. You know, it's just so, yeah. So that was dumb. That said, Randy Orton attacking, first of all, was it Corey Graves who said Randy's not going to be happy, or he's surprised that Randy was so low on the list? But then Corey was totally dumbfounded. Well, why is Randy out here attacking Rusev and Rude? Well, hello, 15 minutes ago you just said why. And it's obvious. I don't like when the announcers are told to play dumb. Clearly, Orton was doing that because he's trying to make a statement to the locker room. Don't look past me. Don't rate me that low. I'm fine if the top 10 list is used in that way. I just want it done without the stupid, lame jokes and the announcers having to play dumb on it.
Right. And, you know, I just feel like I don't – are they going to use it for, oh, this person is at this level, so they're going to get a title shot? Or is it just going to be a thing where it's like, oh, you know, the people in the locker room don't really respect me, so I'm angry now? I don't like the fact that we don't really know what it is. And it's almost like they're purposely not telling us because they maybe don't even know what it is.
Well, Brian, I will say, Brian said that he and Shane will use it in an advisory sense. Like, okay, it's one of the ingredients. I'm okay with that, but I want them to utilize that. Like, I want there to be a point where Daniel Bryan looks at the top 10 list and says, you know what, the locker room clearly is believes in this particular wrestler. Let's say it's Becky Lynch. And Becky isn't getting opportunities, and her making the list but not getting title shots recently tells me we're doing something wrong as management that the wrestlers have noticed. And so, you know what? Let's get Becky in a title opportunity. We'll do a triple threat match here with these other two. No, I'm kidding. We'll do a match with the two top contenders and Becky against who I thought was the number one contender, Naomi, and the winner gets to face Charlotte, you know, at Fastlane or whatever. So I think there's a way to make this work. I think there's a way to have the locker room voting B, it a novel thing that gets weaved into the show, not overdone, but gets weaved into the show. And so it has potential, and I like it better than just a straight-up management-created top 10 list, which always seemed flawed and just distracting.
Yeah, I mean, we do have to give – I'm sometimes gun-shy about giving things a chance in WWE. I'll be the first one to admit it, because sometimes they don't give me a reason to. And
you're a long-time viewer, then.
I am, yes, yes. Very long time. Yeah. Unfortunately, or I don't know. But I just feel like – and also with these lists, we have seen them in other promotions, and it just seems like a lot of the time it just starts with promise and then it fizzles. So I just am. I'm gun-shy on stuff like this. I guess that – you know, the possibility is there for it to be unique, for it to be different, for it to be something that can set SmackDown apart from Raw. And I mentioned earlier how, you know, it used to feel like that was the case, and now it's almost like it's just kind of like an hour less version of Raw. So I guess that could be a positive thing. We'll have to see how it plays out. But again, if you're going to have stuff like, okay, Ty Dillinger's isn't in the top 10, but we probably won't even hear from Ty Dillinger. He probably won't even be in any matches of any consequence, despite him being in the top 10. So I think that they have to actually use it, and they have to actually do stuff that makes sense with it. And I guess it's a possibility, but again, I don't have a whole lot of confidence that they're going to use it in the right way. That's the issue for me.
Yep. Yep. We have an eventful 205 Live tonight. So I'm interested to see how this brand develops. And if they can set an example with some better booking and some fresh faces and tell storylines that maybe can inspire SmackDown to freshen up. Since the last time we talked, Mike, SmackDown's gone through a stretch of doldrums.
Oh, absolutely.
Lame episodes. And, you know, this we went through the whole Survivor Series escapade, and the viewership was up because of all the cross-promotion, but the shows weren't very good because they had to set aside all the inter-brand feuds. And then we got to the holidays, and you're thinking, okay, you know, after the holidays, they'll really kick things up. And they just – I mean, there were some shows that felt like half the crew was snowed in at an airport, and the show had to be rewritten, and the person rewriting it was hungover. And, I mean, it's just uninspired, you know. And, I mean, it's been better the past couple of weeks, but I'm just – when I think of SmackDown – all I think about is Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon talking and bickering, and Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, and AJ Styles. And I'm fine with all of that being part of the show, although I think it's been the central part of the show for too long. But they need to do a better job making us think something else of significance is happening. I think Randy Orton being in that mix with Rusev and Roode and what they do with it has a chance to be good, but I want them to tell a story that isn't just, you know, Tom Phillips going, what is Randy Orton doing? And he wants to be U.S. champion. And and then fans are chanting Rusev Day while Aiden English is trying to turn him heel. And Bobby Roode is still this cardboard cutout of a personality with nothing other than a robe and a word. And they don't – it's like there's potential here to do some really compelling stuff. I don't want to sit through 3, 4, 5 weeks of just, what is Randy Orton doing? And Rusev Day, but he's a heel. It's just like, give me something more. So I'm hoping we see SmackDown step up.
It's absolutely felt like it's been going through the motions essentially, and just trying to get to that road to WrestleMania for the most part. And it's so dominated by Owens and Zayn and Styles and Bryan and McMahon, and it feels like you have this two-hour show, and an hour of it is taken up by that one storyline. You don't really have a mid-card to speak of. The women's division gets maybe one segment a week, and the tag team division, I think, is good, but, you know, you don't really have necessarily many storylines going, although you're starting to build one now a little bit with the Usos and the Bludgeon Brothers, and I think that is the issue, is that you have less time than Raw, and yet you're dedicating most of your show to one storyline, and you really can't afford to do that. And I think that's a big part of why it feels stale, because I do feel like the whole AJ Styles and Owens and Zayn thing has felt stale for a few weeks now, and they just keep going with it, and you're going to go another month with it now, and it's just you can't get out of that same cycle, it almost feels like.
Another email on the top 10 list, which, again, I'm hoping they can parlay this into shaking things up in a good way and giving us more things to care about in between those key wrestlers. Brian from Peoria, Illinois says, I'm curious as to why the World Women's and Tag Team Champions are included in this list. We haven't talked about that yet, Mike. Wasn't the premise of the list to determine future opportunity, like determine future title shots? Yes, it's supposedly being voted on by the roster to allow some creative wiggle room, but it's still essentially a top contenders list, right? So what's the point of wasting spots on those already carrying their respective divisions' titles? Clearly, this smells of storylines and angles galore, as we saw later in the show with some of the wrestlers' tweets about their spots. But shouldn't the premise make more sense? Also, not to take the list too seriously, but give me a break. Ty Dillinger, number 10. Setting aside his gimmick, Naomi, number 4. I'd easily rate her before everyone else on this list except for Ty Dillinger. At least make it more believable. So, you know, I want there to be some sense of why people got, you know, voted into the spot that they got in, and have the announcers talk about it and have there be a reason for it. I want to give it a few weeks, you know, before we just totally write it off. But there's this should not be that hard to get right. So I'm going to hold them to a high standard. You know, you can't just throw names out there and have it make no sense week to week indiscriminately. The idea of mixing the women tag team and men, I'm fine with. That's better than just separate lists, because that'd be overwhelming and there's not enough tag teams and, frankly, women to make that interesting. And I like the idea of where the women and men rank, even though they don't wrestle each other, how they rank. It's sort of like a hot list or a power list, you know, just of acts in general, not necessarily in the same division. The downside of having the champions there is it does eat up some spots. But the bright side is, like Charlotte's tweet, I'm going to aim to win over my colleagues and get voted ahead of AJ. I don't want to be number 2 to the men's champion. And so, you know, that's another storyline you can tell where Charlotte and AJ don't feud, but they have in the ring, they don't actually fight, but there's a little feud or rivalry in terms of who gets to be ranked number 1.
Yeah, you know, I'm totally fine with all the divisions being intertwined in the list, because I think that you want to present everybody on an equal playing field, and that's how it should be in a situation like this. And it does, I think, if you have Charlotte on there and Charlotte's ahead of Shinsuke Nakamura, I think that does speak to Charlotte's star power, and I think that's a good thing for her and a good thing for the women's division. Again, what I will say to, you know, answer one of the comments of the email is that I just feel like my issue with the list is that it's so vague. And the criteria for what makes you be on this list is very vague, and the rationale behind what you do with the list is very vague. And I think that, again, I think it's by design, because I think that they're kind of just feeling it out and playing it by ear, and they're going to decide as they go how they want to play this. But at the same time, I think that it can be frustrating as a fan when you see this list and you see this thing and it's a list of 10 wrestlers before you, but you're like, what are we doing with this? What does it even mean? And there's no actual explanation. And I think that we're all starved for explanations and for reasoning behind everything in wrestling. And when we don't get it, then I think that's where we start to feel like they don't really know what they're doing with this. And I think that's the issue that you could run into with the list if they don't actually start doing something with it. And they just kind of like throw it out there and here it is. It is what it is. And let the wrestlers bicker and say, I should be number 1. And that's all it is. I think that you have to actually do something concrete with it and make it matter.
Let's go to Jason from Michigan next. He says, after watching tonight, I've come to the conclusion that it's more important than ever that Corey Graves has taken off SmackDown. Not because he's not good. He's pretty much their best color guy in the main roster by default. But with Booker gone on Raw, he's become more and more babyface. Yet on SmackDown, he's a heel. And it's just going to do more harm than good keeping him on both shows. Thanks for your time. Mike, what do you think about the two Corey Graves? Do you notice that? Is it definitive enough to really stick out?
You know, for me, I think that, honestly, with Corey Graves, he seems to play that tweener role. I think it depends who it is. It depends on the situation. I don't know if it's really a distinction between Raw or SmackDown. I guess maybe you could say because Byron Saxton tries to play that uber babyface that maybe Corey Graves is forced to kind of balance him out a little bit more by going heel. I don't necessarily think it's a concerted effort, though, on Corey Graves' part where he's like, okay, I'm on Raw, so I'm going to lean babyface. I'm on SmackDown, because I'm going to lean heel. What I will say is I agree that Corey Graves is the best commentator they have in the entire company, for my money at least, and he brings a different perspective. He's really entertaining. The one thing that is an issue, though, is anytime you get anybody and you put them on multiple shows like that. Michael Cole was doing it for a while with Raw and SmackDown. I think Saxton might have been doing it for a little while. If you put them on both shows and they're on every single day, every single show, there can be a burnout effect. And I think not only for the viewers, but also for the announcer himself. So I think maybe at some point you want to just put Corey Graves on one show so that there isn't that burnout effect, and so that he can be dedicated to the one brand. But the issue is you don't have you know, you have this dearth of quality announcers in WWE, so you have to develop somebody that could actually take his place. Until they do that, I guess they kind of have to have him on both shows, but I do think that you risk overexposure at a certain point if you keep having him be on both shows.
Let's hit a couple other topics we haven't gotten to that people didn't email about either, but the Charlotte win over Liv Morgan, she says, you know, one down, two to go. I was fine with this. I mean, you know, Charlotte got triple teamed. Now she wants to take them out one at a time. The announcers say she might be, you know, being overzealous, but, you know, it sort of sets her up to be seeming like she's fighting with the numbers against her. And it gives Charlotte something to do on TV and to score some wins and to build up to, you know, whatever they do with Ruby, which maybe will give her a little more credibility in the end. So I was fine with this. How about you?
Yeah, I didn't have an issue with it. I think that, to me, it seems like they're building towards Charlotte versus Ruby Riott potentially at Fastlane. That's kind of your holdover feud until you get to WrestleMania for Charlotte. The one thing I will say that I'm not a huge fan of with this Riott Squad feud against Charlotte is last week they beat her down for what seemed like 5 minutes, and there was no aid for Charlotte. Mm-hmm. Yet in the many, many weeks leading up to that, Naomi and Becky Lynch were helping Charlotte at every turn, and now they're nowhere to be found when she's had at this numbers disadvantage against the Riott Squad. So just the lack of continuity irritates me. But with that said, I think that having Charlotte face a group makes sense because Charlotte is this physically imposing figure, and it, you know, you have the heels with this numbers advantage. It's a good story to be told. I just think that it's funny that they go this route after they had Becky and Naomi having her back for so many weeks in a row, specifically against the Riott Squad.
Yeah, no, good point, good point. What's your take on the Usos promos the last 2 weeks?
I think they've been fantastic. Honestly, the Usos, I don't know if I can think of a person or a group that's gone from being so nondescript on the mic to being really an elite level in WWE right now on the mic. Out of nowhere, it's been a development over the past year plus, year and a half maybe, since they did the brand split and they had that changing character and they went away from the face paint and they went to this new character. But they've hit this peak in terms of their mic work where they're as good as almost anybody in the company right now. And their promos are resonating. Their promos are in tune. Their promos are delivering a very clear message. And I just think that, especially tonight, I thought that was an amazing promo. I thought that we got real insight into who the Usos are, because they've been saying, you know, welcome to the Uso Penitentiary for how long, but really, what does that mean? I don't know what that means. And now they're explaining it, like, you know, the Uso Penitentiary, it means we're inside your head. And now it clicks for me. I assume it clicks for a lot of people that were watching. I was like, wow, that's a really deep idea. And that's something that you don't generally get in a lot of promos. So I thought the Usos were absolutely fantastic tonight. And just in general, in-ring work, character, promos, the Usos are one of the best acts in all of WWE right now. And I think that this is the best that they've ever been by a long shot.
And I want to see them do more with them. And they need to strengthen the tag team division to have, you know, 4 or 5 credible, serious tag teams. There's this tendency in WWE that you have 2 or 3 tag teams who are semi-serious, and then the rest are, well, they're on the roster because of their comedic ability or their characters, and just by default, they end up teaming them together because they don't want them taking up singles matches, and then they end up being the 3rd or 4th or 5th tag team on the depth chart, and the tag team, as Gable and Benjamin angrily pointed out, turns into a bit of a joke. So I'd like to see WWE. They're not required to keep people on the roster, whether it's the Ascension or Breezango or the Aiden English types. I'm not advocating for them to lose their jobs, but you don't need to have that many kind of comedic characters who fans don't take seriously. I think they tried to send a little lip service to the idea that the Ascension are on the rebound a little bit, that they're not just jokes and clowns, even though they lost. They paid a little lip service to the idea that, well, they seemed to take themselves seriously for once and showed something. The Usos are good, and they deserve to have not only one set of challengers, but a couple others in the pipeline that fans are eager to see them feud with. And, you know, the New Day, I'm so over them right now, and the pancakes, and the, oh my God, I can't believe they just said that, except they always say stuff for shock value, so it's not really shocking, and they're so pleased with themselves, you just sort of don't want to give them anything in return. That's where I'm with them now. And so they're just kind of being wasted, or, you know, they're not – they'll eventually get to Usos New Day again unless they do a shakeup. But Gable and Benjamin is like the only serious team right now, Mike, that carries any kind of weight, and I don't know that they can build up anybody else quickly for that spot once they're done with them.
Well, you know, I think the talent level in the SmackDown Tag Team Division especially is huge. I think that, you know, obviously the Usos are great. I think that Gable and Benjamin, a great team, but I don't like the way that they ended that feud so abruptly and so suddenly. New Day, we see what they do, what they can do with the Usos from in-ring perspective, regardless of what their character is and regardless of, you know, the pancake shtick and all that. So they can work well with them. I think the Bludgeon Brothers and the Usos is going to be a really strong feud potentially. And then you have Breezango, that's your comic relief. But at the same time, that's a popular team that people want to see. So I think that the talent is there, and you have five really, really good teams from that perspective. But the challenge, is it seems like it always is putting together the storylines and having, you know, consistency and telling these, you know, having these angles and having sub angles of teams trying to face each other to get to the Usos eventually. I just think that that's where they're lacking. I think that they have the teams. It's just a matter of establishing them. And I think that's often, you know, an issue in WWE, not only in the tag team division, not only on SmackDown, just from top to bottom, essentially. So I think that's something that they have to figure out. But I think that the pieces are in place. They just have to learn how to fit them together.
I'd like to see the Bludgeon Brothers feuding with New Day and winning the feud to get them credibility instead of beating up the comedy teams or the teams that are seen as borderline jobbers, to give them more credibility. And then the Usos, you know, where fans are anticipating this is going to be a real clash. I like squash matches, but I think you have to get beyond Bludgeon Brothers beating up jobbers and get them to a point where they're beating a credible other contending team. And I hope that they get there and tell that story, because the Uso act deserves that. I love the line in their promo near the end where they said, we went from, they might be all right, to match of the night. And I thought that was the key line, because that is how a lot of people felt. They're okay. They might be okay, you know, in the rainbow colors. But now they're a match. You want to stay in your seat and schedule watching and make sure that you see what they do. Another email comes in from Michael Vorjic, proud VIP member. He says, did you catch that Corey Graves said, or that Corey Graves would last 6 seconds in a street fight comment by New Day after the top 10 announcement? Did you think it was a rib on Booker T situation, or is this going somewhere? Go VIP. You and your staff helped me get through my 12-hour work days with your informative and quality podcasts. I might not always agree, but I love hearing things from different informed points of view. You, Bruce, Todd, Rich, and the rest, I say thank you. Proud VIP member. Thank you very much, Michael. There was a segment actually at the top of the show, also near the beginning, where New Day made a reference, where they answered a question on Twitter and said something about surviving, Corey Graves surviving a left hook or something like that. And they said, well, he'll be finding out soon or something like that. So they were playing into that, the strange Booker T interview, our comments that he made on his own podcast. Your take on the Booker T comments, Mike, but also WWE playfully, I guess, acknowledging a physical threat by one employee against another publicly?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a rip for my money. And then, you know, going back to Monday with Corey Graves made the comment to Coach about, you know, if you don't watch it, you're going to have to go start doing local radio pretty soon, was obviously a jab at Booker as well. So, you know, I don't really know what to make of any of this. I thought it was very strange, the stuff that Booker said. I think that everybody who watched the chemistry, or maybe lack thereof, between Booker and Corey Graves thought it was, you know, a little bit bizarre, where Booker would go off on his tangents and then Corey Graves would say, I have no idea what you're talking about. And they would kind of laugh and they would kind of jab at each other. But you just kind of thought it was like the, you know, the face versus heel commentator dynamic. But then, you know, Booker T comes out and says these things, and you have to think that he's saying them because he means them, because he wouldn't be saying them for an angle, because what angle could you have with a guy who can never wrestle again due to concussions? So I don't think it can be an angle. So I guess what WWE is doing, what Corey Graves is doing, and New Day and whoever else brings it up, is just trying to make light of the situation and trying to maybe just, you know, push it away a little bit and say, you know, let's cool it and let's not get so serious here, and let's just kind of, you know, touch gloves and be done with it and not actually get into any kind of physical situation, because obviously that's going to lead to firings, it's going to lead to suspensions or whatever, and that's something that you can't condone if you're WWE. At the same time, I don't know if you really want to just ignore it, because it's very much out there and people know about it. So I guess WWE's kind of trying to take that middle road and just trying to laugh it off and move on. But I do think it's a little bit strange, and I think that it's a little bit awkward that you have somebody saying that somebody costs them their job, and I'm never going to fight them if I see them in catering, but if I see them on the street, I'm going to fight them. I just don't know if that's a dynamic you really want to have in your company.
Yeah, it doesn't make it better, Booker, that, well, I'm not going to beat them up in the workplace, but if I see them on the street, I will. It's like, that's no different. That's not better.
You'll still get fired. You will still get fired.
Yeah, you're making threats that are criminal if you're serious, and I'm not quite sure how we can laugh them off. I'm not sure that I think WWE should be making light of it and drawing attention to it. I think it's the type of thing where Triple H calls upon her, or, you know, head of human resources calls upon her and says, I mean, calls a booker and says, you can't do this. And at the very least, gives a very stern warning and asks him to apologize or, you know, retract the comments and say he was just, you know, joking around or whatever he has to do and move on. The idea of playing it up in a playful way doesn't take away what it came across as, which is a very public threat by one employee of another who seemed legitimately mad. I thought they were getting under each other's skin and getting on each other's nerves, especially Booker seemed irritated by Corey in a legit way the last few weeks that he was on the air. And I wasn't surprised to see a change. But, you know, I've said at other places, Booker was costing WWE wrestlers money with his horrendous color commentary. Cluelessly awful. And so he doesn't have a right to a job that he's awful at. And if Corey Graves was part of getting him off the air, that was servicing WWE stockholders and their money, Booker doesn't have a right to a job that he's bad at. So Corey didn't take money off his table. Booker took money off his table by being as bad as he was almost every week during the whole stretch that he was doing color commentary. To not know how awful you were makes it even worse, I think, to be as awful as he was. And I like Booker. I've interviewed him, and I think he's good in other roles. Color commentary wasn't his thing. He didn't have the right instincts for it, and he didn't seem aware of how bad he was, which was just stunning. So the product is better without him on commentary. He was a guilty pleasure, but I don't like laughing at someone. And I thought it was actually kind of cruel to keep him on the air when I thought he was put out there as a clown to see what dumb thing would he say next. And I thought, as much as it was a guilty pleasure, I say the word guilty because I do think it was wrong to keep him on the air when he kept embarrassing himself.
Right. It was like that train wreck quality where it was a level of entertainment, but it wasn't the level of entertainment that you want to get across. And I think that, you know, Jonathan Coachman might be a little bit vanilla as an announcer, right, but I think that he adds something to the broadcast, and I think that Raw's announce team for the past couple of weeks has benefited greatly from it. So I think that's really all you can say about the matter is that, you know, you feel, I guess you feel for Booker T a little bit, but the fact of the matter is he wasn't made for that role. And he was essentially put in that role in a situation where it doesn't fit his skill set and he's not going to succeed. So I think if anything, that's what I feel for him, is that he was put into that situation and he's not a natural color commentator. You said it right. He's good in other roles, but that's just not it for him. And I think that the Raw announce team is a lot better off now that it's set up the way that it is.
And this is a guy who bragged about phoning it in and acting like TNA was a country club. And when you're a wrestler taking money from when you're a color commentator or a wrestler and you're taking money from the budget and you are admitting at one point you weren't even trying, that costs wrestlers jobs. If Booker was engaged in trying his best in TNA, maybe TNA would have succeeded more. And to laugh at that in retrospect, it's fine if you want to do it, but don't expect sympathy when you lose your gig, because you've already admitted that at one point you were on purpose not taking it seriously. And, you know, you can say, well, the company wasn't worth taking seriously, and you, if you were there, you would understand it. Well, yeah, but then I wouldn't brag about it. You know, I would let my subpar performance speak for itself, but not brag about how you essentially sandbag the company, or at least treat it like a country club and not seriously. I just don't think that there's anything to be gained to your personal reputation by bragging that you accepted a paycheck but didn't give it your all. Okay, Kenny Williams says, what are the chances AJ drops the title at Fastlane to give Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn more heat for taking away the dream match the majority of people want to see at WrestleMania? Love the show. Can't recommend going VIP enough. PW Torch puts out the best pro wrestling podcast. It keeps you updated on all the happenings going on in pro wrestling today. Thank you, Kenny, for the kind words. I don't think there's much of a chance, but my God, this wouldn't it just be the punchline to this that they do Fastlane and then they continue feuding? Just to fill time because they don't have confidence in Shinsuke. So they end up having like Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn co-champions, but then Shane books AJ in a rematch and Shane, and then AJ wins it. Or worse, there's a dispute and it turns into a fatal four-way at WrestleMania and they take away Shinsuke's one-on-one with AJ.
I'll say, you know what? I'll say there's zero chance.
Good.
I truly believe there's zero chance. I do. They're going with Shinsuke against AJ. They got to do it.
But will they do a detour? Will they have KO and Sammy win the belts? One of them win the belt in the meantime.
I don't think they would. I mean, they did have that whole convoluted storyline leading up to WrestleMania last year, where they were all, you know, Orton won the Royal Rumble, and he said, "No, I don't want it," and then, "No, I do want it," and then AJ was in the mix. But I just think that this year they made it very clear that they're going with Shinsuke against AJ, and I think they're just going to have AJ retain, and then you can branch off and have whatever's going on with Owens and Zayn independent from the title, whether it's them feuding or whether it's them teaming back up to go against the authority of SmackDown. I just don't think that you need to have the title involved there, and I think that your money match for SmackDown is AJ against Shinsuke, so I think they're just going to move directly toward that after Fastlane. I think it's nothing but a holdover until you get to WrestleMania.
Yeah. Final email, VIP member Ted from Sacramento. Was I the only one who stopped paying attention once they announced the very first name, Ty Dillinger, at number 10? Too cute, too stupid. So we'll end on that note. Mike, thank you so much for joining me here on the post-SmackDown edition of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for being a listener of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast here at Podcast One. If you enjoy this show, you might also enjoy some other topics that are covered by my colleagues over at PW Torch Livecast. It's 7 days a week, 7 shows covering niche topics and themes. The newest show, Pat McNeil, hosting on Tuesdays, a show called Making the List. Each episode that drops Tuesday nights features a top 7 list on a specific theme and a discussion on that along with some other topics with a special guest co-host from the wrestling world or one of his colleagues at pwtorch.com. There's also an NXT show on Wednesdays, an Impact show on Thursday nights, a Best of Livecast on Friday nights, the Deep Dive with Rich Fan going in-depth on a single topic on Saturday nights, Wrestling Night in America with Greg Parks discussing the biggest events in professional wrestling coming up and in its past, along with the post-pay-per-view call-in shows, including following big pay-per-views like the Royal Rumble and WrestleMania, and all of them in between. And then Monday nights, it's MMA Talk for pro wrestling fans. 7 days a week, a show for you, and they're free. And they're available just by searching PW Torch in Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts, or just visit the homepage and take a look at all the themes and all the time slots at pwtorchlivecast.com. That'll do it for me for today. Thanks to Mike, our caller Hayden, and our callers, our listeners who called into the show, and everyone who sent in emails. Speaking of emails, Jason Powell joins me on the Thursday flagship. Get your email questions in for the Thursday flagship on a broad array of topics. The entire wrestling industry is open for the mailbag, so anything you want to ask about ROH, NXT, New Japan, wrestling history, WWE topics, broader than just what happened on Raw and SmackDown, 205 Live, all of that and more. Email us, WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. Speaking of the Wade Keller Podcast, don't forget, you've got to flip over to the blue brand, the blue feed, for the last 2 shows of the week, and that features Jason Powell's appearance on the Thursday flagship, and then Interview Friday with Nick Aldis, who will show you why he calls himself a polarizing figure in this wrestling industry, with a compelling conversation with him about the direction of the new NWA run by Billy Corgan of the Smashing Pumpkins and former WWE creative team member Dave Lagana, who also worked behind the scenes recently in TNA and also in ROH at one point. Some impressive resumes from those two. And Nick talks about working for them and the direction of his crusade, his NWA title crusade, where he'll defend the title 20 times against 20-plus opponents over 60 nights. We'll talk about how that originated, a fascinating story. But he also has some thoughts on TNA talent going to WWE and thoughts on Ronda Rousey and the women's evolution and quite a bit more. So tune in for that part one this Friday It is not one to miss. But you got to flip over to our blue brand, the blue logo, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. Just search Wade Keller and subscribe to the red band and the blue brand. Easy for me to say, easy for you to do. Search Wade Keller wherever you listen to Pro Wrestling Podcasts and subscribe. Thank you, everybody. And until next time, Wade Keller thanking you and signing off.